You know, so many of us are so concerned with figuring out how to build the new earth or bring the new earth in. And this episode with Travis and Marie of Althea Herbals actually really teaches that maybe the way to bring the new earth in, maybe the way to be stewards of the planet and each other is actually to go back to the basics, go back to the beginning, and really be the humans we were when it was the old earth and we were still in beautiful relationship with each and everything around us like it was alive, because it is.
Hey, softpreneur, there is magic happening right now because you're here with us and we are well met. We're Elisa Joachim and Don Petrin, and we help the wellness industry's most disruptive thought leaders express their essence louder and prouder to create more profitability and possibility. And now it's your turn. So if you're at all curious about business energetics or business's stewardship or how the way you walk this earth, dance this earth dance, informs every aspect of your life and business, we hope you love this conversation as much as we did.
Yay. Welcome back, everyone, to Softpreneur. I am so freaking excited because today we are chatting with Marie and Travis of Althea Herbals. This is my second year studying with them in person, which is amazing. I have been doing like an embodied herbalism course with them where they give us a tincture and then we take it for a month without learning anything about it, unless we do it on our own, but we're not supposed to. And we're supposed to just like really like learn to listen to the herb itself, to the plant. And then from there, we come together with the group and they teach us everything. And it's crazy. It's like a 16 to 20 page packet of info every single month. And yeah, living in a little valley with, you know, there's not that many people here, but it seems like we're just like filled with the coolest. So yes, I'm so excited to have you two here. Thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Woohoo. So we always start with this question. So I'm putting it to ya, which is, do you have a spiritual practice and is there anything you would like to share about it?
I would say that both of us, our spiritual practice is probably really rooted in herbalism. I mean, inevitably, if you're spending a lot of time outside with plants, with the seasons, it's very grounded and pragmatic in that way. But I would say that the herbs are really guiding our sense of connection to something bigger than ourselves, which really is, you know, when we think about spirituality, it's kind of that the essence of reaching towards something bigger, connecting with something bigger than oneself. And so I would say nature is our spiritual practice and our connection to nature.
Yeah, I would say the greatest spiritual experiences I've had have absolutely been in being engaged with the living world. You know, I feel like kind of that journey began for me, like many people, being introduced to, say, yoga or meditation and stuff. And I feel like that's incredible. But I always felt like it was disconnected and a little bit disembodied for myself. And so for me, having these kind of more embodied mindfulness practices in relationship with the living world has really informed me a lot about my place in this world, giving me insights into the larger world and universe that we're all a part of. And of course, working with herbal medicines themselves, I would say that's very much our like spiritual practice as well, because we feel like there's just so much that these plants can offer as individuals to ourselves and teach us about ourselves. And frankly, for myself, psychedelics have been a major part of my spiritual practice, and have kind of helped me to sensitize myself to my own experience in my body, sensitize myself to my own mind, how that works, how my emotions are felt within the body, and also my relationship with other humans and non-humans alike. So I have to give huge credit to psychedelics, particularly psychedelic mushrooms. And since those experiences, I feel like because I've kind of helped gain a deeper sensitivity to the world, working just with, you know, normal plants have been some of the greatest teachers. And I don't feel like I have to go to psychedelics nearly as much as I did in the past for these deep insights and how to live a good life in relationship with everyone else.
Yay. Okay. That is amazing. I agree. I remember the first time I did mushrooms. I was actually a little bit older. I was like 24, I think. I had been like reading about them on the internet for so long before that. And yeah, I agree. It was like this remembrance. Like I think I'm lucky. It wasn't like a psychosis thing. It was like, oh, of course. I've had friends who got into psychedelics and then they were like, oh no, I didn't realize the world was this way. And now I'm like, now the rest of my life doesn't make sense. And for me, I was like, oh, of course, of course. And I felt like they were like speaking to me, like chattering, but they were like squirrels. That was my experience with it. It was like this like forest dwelling squirrel creature. So I'm so glad you brought that up. We have spoken a little bit about psychedelics on here, mostly in terms of like, you know, a couple of our guests are into like microdosing to make work more fun, I guess, was like something that was brought up. And I have to say as well, when I first started studying with you guys, and right off the bat, one of the first things you spoke about and was in the course packet was on like animism. And I was like, oh my God, yes, I've landed in the right place. Like nobody's talking about this. And I was like, thank goodness. So yeah, I wonder if you know, I'm not expecting like a 90-minute lecture, but I wonder if you want to like define animism for our listeners a little bit.
I love that you say we don't need to do a 90-minute lecture, because you know how Travis and I get so hyped to talk about animism than to talk about plants. Animism is this paradigm in which we like to show up in the world and how we like to relate to plants, but also just nature as a whole. And it's this recognition that there's this aliveness or this animate force within all parts of nature. So that can be things that we normally in our culture would recognize as alive, like humans and other animals and plants, but it's also extended to things like weather systems and water and stone, and just all parts of nature has this essence and aliveness that's expressed through it, and that we can learn a lot about ourselves through recognizing the patterns that are expressed through nature, because it's the same animate force that is essentially speaking through all that is.
Yeah. And for me, it's not until actually relatively recently, just the last few years, that word animism actually felt like it fit. Like all of this I knew to like the core of my being, but once I started reading more animist literature, listening to podcasts and so on, it's like, oh, this is it. And what I love about animism is it's not necessarily a belief system like many different religions or spiritual practices and so on. It's rather just the way things are. And when we open ourselves and become more human in the sense that we live in direct relationship with the living world, whereas as modern people, we're so disconnected, so disembodied that we don't even acknowledge the aliveness of ourselves in relationship with the aliveness to the world. Once that's deconditioned and kind of falls away, and we open up to the world and we sensitize ourselves to the world, we're like, oh, everything is alive. And what I thought was separate from myself is actually myself. All of it is one, you know, classic cliche. But when you actually perceive the world that way in an embodied way, well, your whole relationship with the world changes and the way you interact with the world changes. And it has for me, definitely. And so animism for me is this like active living practice or like engagement with the living world. It isn't just a belief that I have out in my mind. It's something I live and experience every single day. And that's what I love. And it doesn't necessarily require any sort of belief system. It truly is, from my experience, just the way things are.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is it's just so built on relationship. So it's so built on us relating to everything else, right? And so that really makes it embodied and rooted, rather than it being something that can live in our heads, because it's actual lived experience, which is really powerful.
And I would say that's like that's the foundation of animism and spirituality for ourselves. It's like, what is our actual lived experience? You know, there's a lot of different theories and ideas of like what herbalism is or what health and wellness is and so on and so forth. But if I haven't seen that or experienced myself, there's still this question mark. And until I have a lived experience of something, it's hard for me to fully relate to that. Of course, I do like to take in as much information as possible to help inform my opinion and maybe give me new insights. But fundamentally, a lot of my belief systems are based on what I also experienced.
Yeah, I think this is so important. I feel like, is it Joshua Schrey? Is that how you say his last name? But he's the Emerald podcast, and he has a whole podcast on like animism is normative thinking. And it's like actually for 99% of human existence, like there wasn't a name for animism because we were just in it. We knew that we were in relationship with everything outside of ourselves. Like there is nothing outside of ourselves, right? It's all in relation. And I feel like in our modern world, we definitely, I mean, I studied philosophy, and in particular, I was really into like the scientific revolution and what was happening then and how that like pulled us apart from spirit and how it had to happen in order to learn more and also to like get out of the power of the church. But on the other hand, we've gone all the way in this other direction where like now spirit, it only can exist in religion. And I think when we realize that we are in relation with everything and everyone, it's a lot easier to do what we speak about a lot, which is like, you know, be in business in a way that like actually stewards both the earth and like other humans, right? And like not be predatory or parasitic as business owners, but be like loving and taking into account that every action that we make, including how we price our programs or what have you, affects, you know, everyone around us and, you know, like the bottles that things are in and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I'd love to now, and then we can really dig into anything and everything, because I have referred to you to a number of times. And of course, Patrick, who also I adore, but as like someone who's like helped me to come to more of an understanding of like what stewardship is. So I wonder what you guys think about both, like you could define stewardship if you want, or you could tell us and our listeners how in your own business you are doing your best to continue to steward like the earth and other humans and all of the animals. Not to put you on, no pressure.
Well, I'll start by saying that we're part of a really messy situation, a messy culture. And so, you know, inevitably that is part of it. And so we do try and make really conscientious decisions. And also it's just like hard. It's hard being part of this culture and also trying to be mindful and trying to practice stewardship. So we'll speak to what we are doing though, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So obviously as herbalists, we work with herbs. So one of the first decisions we had to make as a business is, what are we going to do about that? You know, many herbalists practice herbalism in very different ways. And I'm not saying our way is the only way or the right way. Rather, we, from our own kind of insights into how we want to approach the world, made certain conscientious decisions. And so one of the main decisions we made as herbalists is deciding to be actively engaged with the living world by harvesting our own plants from nature, having that direct relationship with seeing, observing, being with plants and mushrooms and animals and the sun and the moon and so on in nature, experiencing that. That is a part of the medicine for me individually, but also for those other people. And then there's a level of integrity of quality of herb and so on, which is definitely an issue in the herbal world. So as an herbalist, to be stewards of the land, I think, is to take those sorts of things into account. Where are we getting our herbs and how are we caring for the places in which those herbs are coming from? In the herbal world, well, first of all, the herbal market I've seen expand massively over the last couple decades I've been in this world. And many different herbal companies are sourcing herbs, obviously, from all over the planet. Some herbs don't exist in Canada, so they have to import them from elsewhere. Who knows what kind of regulations, what kind of wages people are making, how they're stewarding the land that they're on as well. Often it's not very good. Even though it may say organic, doesn't necessarily mean that the plants are being harvested in a good or ethical or sustainable way. The people may not be taken care of very well. I remember some of the first times I saw like bulk packages of herbs, you know, 15 years ago or so, and I saw cigarette butts in these packages, and I was talking to someone about that, and they're like, well, yeah, a lot of the people who are harvesting these particular herbs are actually pregnant women with babies on their backs or other men that are in extreme poverty as well. So you'll find items in these herbal packages that are from who knows where. And it just gave me a really big insight pretty early in the herbal world. Oh, there's other people on the other side of this. And these are coming from places that maybe have very different standards of care for people and the land. And so as herbalists, we love having that direct relationship with the land that we live on. So a lot of our herbal practice is working with local herbs. In my opinion, that's not necessarily all the herbs we can work with, because some herbs don't have certain qualities that we're looking for. So in some cases, we're also looking for exotic herbs that we bring in, and we really ensure we're looking at companies that do pay their workers appropriately or are practicing ethical practices, are organic, and so on. And one of the great things that's happening more in the last few years, I've really noticed, is Canadian herb farmers are really starting to come out and starting to grow really high quality herbs that are typically more exotic. So for example, you know, chamomile. Chamomile is often grown in Europe, often Eastern Europe, often workers aren't being paid very well. You know, we can get a pound of chamomile for $20 from, you know, Croatia or somewhere. But here in the Kootenays, if we buy from a local grower, it's going to be four times the cost. But when you look at the quality of the product compared to what's coming from who knows where that's sat in a warehouse for who knows how long, it's undeniable that there's a very big difference. And we know that farmers being paid well. We know they're being a good steward of the land. We can have direct relationship. We can go visit the farm in which they're growing them. So there's a level of confidence and integrity in that. And we're willing to pay that extra price for the quality of the herb and to ensure there's some integrity as well. So as herbalists, I think that decision of where you're getting the herbs is one of the main decisions that's going to kind of dictate whether you're running a sustainable or eco-friendly or a healthy long-term business.
So much of what you've shared so far really ties into what Don and I have been parsing of this idea of like business energetics. And there's so many choices that business owners make. And it feels like this is such an amazing example of like at so many choice points, what does it look like to stand in integrity or alignment with your principles? And how do you make choices that have a ripple effect in every aspect of your business, or whether you want to call it your stewardship project or the sacred container and creative project that you're offering to people? It's so interesting too, because we use this phrase, your medicine is your magic, when we're speaking about people sharing their message and their authentic, the kind of medicine that they offer to people in their world. And it strikes me that with plant medicine, there's a whole other dimension about thinking about the medicine you carry, the medicine plants carry, and of this sort of journey that somebody takes for, let's say, working with a plant, with a tincture for an entire month. So I guess I have kind of a vague question, because this is sparking all kinds of thoughts about messengers of meaning and plants as, you know, as messengers and co-creators. But yeah, what does that spark in you, the idea of your medicine being your magic, or the way that plants share messages with us for our growth?
Yeah, I mean, the program that Dawn has, this is your second year being a part of, is very much, it's a way that we like to help people to get to know plants at that one-on-one time, that whole month. Because just like you're saying, every plant does have a message and every plant does have its own magic. And the more time that we actually spend, again, going back to this idea of relationship, forming a relationship with the plant, that's when that really comes forward. And if we just try and memorize it on paper, just read online, Google that plant and what are the properties? Okay, now I know about it. It's, you're never going to get the magic. You're never going to get that deeper relationship, that deeper meaningful connection, those pieces that come through when you spend the time and energy really forming relationship. And so, yeah, I definitely can hear what you're saying and that idea that your medicine is your magic. And I think that that is true for humans. And I think it's true for plants as well.
Mm-hmm. And I do think plants take more time as well about this relationship piece. And being a person who does forage for plants in wild places, with each year, more and more insights about the plant and that particular ecosystem and about myself is revealed with each season that I form those relationships, rather than, you know, like Marie said, memorizing a list of health benefits, then taking a supplement because it says it's good for your digestion is very different than getting to know a plant and also offering back, what can I do for you and the place that you are living as well. And I think by forming that relationship for myself, there has been greater depth, sense of belonging, but also greater sense of who that plant really is and what they can teach us about how to be better stewards of the planet and better healers for people as well, which I just didn't get previously. You know, I worked at a health food store where that was kind of my introduction to herbalism. I was, you know, 20 years old, 21 years old, working at a health food store, didn't know anything about herbalism at all, and really amazed by all these different herbs and so on, and learned pretty quickly that they have really great therapeutic benefits. But it was always used in this kind of, I don't know, there was like this quality of just like consumption. These things are good for me, so I'm going to take as much as I can of that without really getting to know what that plant is, where they come from, how to use it appropriately, where often I saw these products were used inappropriately and people had adverse reactions and so on. And that was because they didn't really understand what this plant has beyond just a list of a couple benefits. Understanding that, oh, there's a whole bunch of other effects that these herbs have. So I do think that relationship piece really reveals a lot of the different health benefits that these herbs have, and then gain deeper insights how they may be more specifically suited to a particular. It's not every herb, it's good for every type of person at every single moment.
Yeah, this thing that you just said about like asking the plant what you can do for it as well, that really like resonates with me. And I wonder about your business, and, you know, how did you decide to say open a clinical practice in Nelson, and in which ways? Because I know you like Travis, I know you're working with like cancer patients, and I know Marie that like, you know, you've got your like somatic sisterhood and your somatic practice as well. And even like last year, you guys released that belonging course. And that belonging course, right, it's like herbalism for mental health, but also it feels like you're addressing, you know, not just like the surface symptoms of like anxiety and depression, but more like the root cause of where this is coming from. And so I'm wondering like how you got ideas to move forward in that way, like why that course, why that name? And to me, I have an intuition that it relates to like relationship with people and plants. So I love if you could speak to us a little bit about, yeah, how you decide to like create these programs for people.
Yeah, I laugh because it's like, it feels so big. And actually the name Belonging, I will admit, came through a mushroom journey that Travis and I were on together. But yeah, we, like, to back up, because the first thing you said is why Nelson, and then why a clinical practice? So for both of us, we've always felt that one-on-one care of actually, rather than trying to mass distribute herbs to just this herb for everyone or this formula for everyone, we've just seen so much benefit from really slowing down, getting to know a person, getting to know the herbs, and then playing that matchmaker where you're really choosing the best possible formula for that person and everything going on in their life. Every person is so complex, and we really need to take the time to get to know people and make sure that we're seeing the whole picture. It's really easy to miss pieces when we're just kind of like, oh, you have a headache, take this herb and done, without asking a lot of the deeper questions. So, and then we ended up in Nelson because I grew up here. So it was, I knew I wanted to come back. Travis had spent time here when he was young and really loved it here. So it was a really obvious choice with all the plant diversity here, with family here, with community here. There were just so many reasons why we were both already in love with this place and knew that we wanted to continue to be here. The name Belonging and the program Belonging, exactly as you said, it is so much more than just mental health, like take these herbs for anxiety. We very much, that program, we're speaking to belongingness. And what is belongingness? It's learning to belong and relate to the wider world for a sense of wholeness, for a sense of connection. Where does anxiety come from? Where does depression come from? A lot of it, not, you know, a lot of it is trauma related and a lot of it is disconnection related. And those two things go together a lot of the time. And so I'm also trained as a somatic therapist, and that gets woven into the work of this sense of learning to be more embodied and learning to form this really deep sense of connection to oneself, but also connection to the land and the plants. And I notice in the world of therapy and somatic therapy, in my opinion, that piece is often missing, where it's a lot about learning to trust yourself, learning to trust your body, learning to listen to the cues of your body. But it's also really important to learn how to relate to the wider world, not just to relate to other humans, but to relate to nature. And that gives people so much wholeness. And so that program was really intended to kind of be this well-rounded container of really practical skills of somatic ways to regulate your nervous system and so on, but also really that wider lens of how can we learn to kind of belong to the place that we live and not be so disconnected.
Mm-hmm. And then for myself, you know, I just remember really early on in my herbal studies. So I studied at Pacific Rim College in Victoria, and it has a really great clinical herbal program, which I feel so grateful for, because we had this opportunity to study under many different herbalists that had many different styles of practice. Anyways, there's this one herbalist, and he was more of like a vitalist kind of somatic type therapist or herbalist. I mean, he wasn't a certified therapist by any means, but he applied a lot of the principles to his practice. And I remember in a number of different mental health cases, he would kind of like tongue in cheek write in the diagnosis section, capitalism. And I was like, I just kind of thought it was funny, but then like upon reflection, it was like, oh no, like he's actually being serious here of like, this person is so harmed as a byproduct of this culture. This culture is so harmful to people in many different ways. And as herbalists, you know, being holistic practitioners, we're not just looking for natural products to recommend to people, but we take into account people's relationship with the wider world, like nature, with the socioeconomic situation that they're embedded in. Are they experiencing houselessness? Are they experiencing domestic challenges with their spouse? Are they having troubles at work? You know, we take into account all of these different factors, and some people have just grown up in a really shitty circumstance, and that is deeply embedded in them and expresses in their health. The body really is ultimate truth and will express all the different experiences that we've had, for better or for worse. And so for myself, that really was one of the first foundational moments where I recognized, oh, there's much more beyond just looking at the symptoms and then treating those symptoms, looking at what are the core issues behind these symptoms that are driving that. And so as a herbalist who primarily works in cancer care, it's undeniable that industrialized modern culture is largely the culprit for a lot of the chronic disease, including cancer, that people are experiencing. And if we want to help people not get cancer, well, we're going to have to dismantle industrial modern culture. That's just a part of it. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to hear, but we can't cure cancer without getting to the core issue of disconnection, trauma, toxins, pollution, electricity, overwhelmed from just stimulation, sitting in a box for 8 hours a day. You know, these are things that are all contributing to cancer, and especially our food systems. So these are all aspects of modern industrialized culture that are contributing to cancer. So I can't discount the fact that that is the main culprit. And then as an herbalist, I'm doing my best to help people as much as possible, but we're swimming in this ocean of illness. And that is fundamentally what I feel like my work in the world is healing the culture, and at least doing my small part to drive the culture towards a different way of being in the world. So people are, of course, in greater health, but of course, talking about relationship to the larger world as whole, that means the larger world will also be healthy as well. So it's not separating and compartmentalizing everything. We're rather looking at the broad scope of why dis-ease is going on in ourselves and in the larger world.
Yeah. Okay. This is so interesting. And I'm going to throw something strangely curveball-y at you, which is that I've been studying family constellations. Have you heard of that? And in family constellations, it's like generally your patterns, your illness, the struggles in your life, they happen because in your lineage, you are having loyalty to someone who's been like ostracized from your ancestry, right? So, you know, whatever you, someone got divorced and did something bad. And so the family turned their back on them. And I'm having this like interesting connect in my mind of like, we need to constellate the disconnect between humankind and nature, and that like actually we need to bring nature back into the lineage, right? Like if nature was to belong again, then we could still have trade, right? You could still make me a tincture and I could pay for it. We wouldn't necessarily have to have like a toxic way of doing trade, because if nature and everyone, if all came back into the lineage, if we brought it all, and as I said, this is like a weird curveball, but if we brought it all back into our lineage and we created a space of belonging, then we probably wouldn't have like the same level of depression, and we probably wouldn't have like the same level of like problematic industrialization or war, like this military industrial complex. Like, you know, people would be like, oh, well, because of wars, we now have Teflon. I don't know if that's exactly true, right? We know that because of wars, we now have like industrialized fertilizer, and I don't think that's necessarily good. But so what I'm trying to say is like, it feels to me this like stewardship and this animism, like maybe we should just constellate it. Like, can we move with our bodies in such a way, all of us, it would have to be like maybe a global constellation. I want to talk to my teacher about this, but like, is there a way to bring nature back in? And is, and that's what, I mean, that's what you guys are doing anyway, right? But I like constellations because it's real fast. And like, wouldn't it be nice if we actually could create belonging for ourselves back in nature, and we don't need to create it, we just need to recognize it, but then also create belonging for nature back into like our family lineage. So that's a strange thought.
It's not a strange thought. I think it's just complex. And it's complex because right now we're talking to each other on a computer. And that computer came, all of us are on a different device with mics and all the things. And all of the gear that we use and the roads that are made out of asphalt or whatever, and like the buildings and the electricity, like we have to realize that we're embedded in such a deep paradigm that is so disconnected and utilizes so much like toxic material for it to exist, that for us to just like turn around and go back to nature, like what does that mean in a really practical way? It's complex, and it's like, it's not such a quick turnaround. I think the paradigm is really important that we start thinking in that way and start making choices in that direction. And also it's going to take time, because what does that look like in a world that's now so tech forward, right?
And just to elaborate a little bit more of what you said too, like going back to like working in nature, being a wildcrafter, one of the foundational principles for me about the relationship, and I just want to speak to that a little bit more, is when we develop relationship with the place that we are embedded in, the ecosystem, the habitat, whether it's downtown Manhattan or whether it's in Nelson, BC, surrounded by mountains, if we begin to form relationship with the place that we are at, we begin to look and perceive that place differently. And in my opinion, and from my experience, we begin to treat that place differently. If we get our food, our water, our medicine from the place that we are embedded in, we will actually treat that place differently. Because we're so disconnected and disembodied, and we're getting water, food, medicine from other places in the world that we don't even consider, well, some of us don't consider, then of course we're going to treat our home not so great. But for me, because I know my medicine comes from a particular place on this particular mountain, I have now an invested interest in protecting that place and ensuring that place is healthy long term. So this is just another example of why relationship and connection is so foundational to just being human, but also foundational to the longevity of our business as well, because I need to be a steward of the land to ensure we continue getting the herbs from that particular place. I want the herbs to be more abundant after I've harvested it from that place than it was prior to me on. So this is really a key piece to how we work as a business and also as practitioners, relationship.
It always goes back to that. And yeah, I mean, I think that what I love about what you're bringing up, Dawn, is just like, it's an invitation to people to really look at like, how can we invite nature back into our lives and that stewardship, like how can I invite that in and whatever that looks like. Like so many people have yards that are full of grass. Your yard could be full of plants. It could be full of food. It could be full of moss. It could be full of squirrels, right? Like you could create an ecosystem in your backyard. Like that's your little piece of stewardship potentially. Like we have these opportunities, but I think sometimes people don't recognize what's in front of them or what they could, where they could maybe start.
Mm-hmm. And so also as a practitioner, we're often seeing clients that aren't necessarily familiar with herbalism. Often we're kind of the end of the line of practitioners. You know, people have seen their, or in my case, an oncologist, they've seen physiotherapists, they've seen all these different practitioners, some have helped to some degree or another, but they're still seeking some level of support. And maybe they've actually been harmed by other practitioners as well. And so for me, I'm often introducing people to herbal medicine that have never worked with herbal medicine ever before. And what's amazing about herbal medicine is that when people actually experience the healing benefits of plants, there's a switch that can often kind of turn on for a lot of people. And I love this kind of insight that one of my teachers brought up. It's like, she's, I love giving people teas, not just tinctures and capsules and so on. She's like, teas. So people really see that flowers are healing them. Flowers are doing this work. It's not some mysterious substance in a bottle. And I think that, again, is coming back to relationship and acknowledging that it's nature that's healing us and supporting us along this journey of greater health.
I love this. And I'm so fascinated by the concept that even if you teach these plants again, year in and year out, or that it's a growing relationship, or that taking it one time might be different than the next. And I'm curious if you guys would share some of your core plant teachers or an example of how a relationship with a particular plant is evolving for you right now. What does it look like?
I think of the plant that's evolving right now, we're in the course that Dawn is a part of, the Plant Teachings Collective. The plant we're currently doing is peppermint, which, I mean, I think most people have somewhat of a relationship with peppermint. We know what it tastes like, smells like. We've had it in our lives and in our worlds, you know. And yet, I think a lot of people don't fully respect the medicine of peppermint and really take the time to see it as this like profoundly medicinal plant. And I've really, over the last few years, found that it's an amazing medicine for me. And I'm really enjoying getting to know it on this deeper level in this more profound way of spending the time of devoting a whole month to getting to know it. It's such a simple plant. We've done this before with other simple plants like chamomile or burdock, like plants that a lot of people have heard of before, because we really like to keep it simple. Let's learn about the plants that are right in front of us. We don't need to import, you know, these exotic herbs. We can work with the plants that are growing in our backyards or that are so easy to access. And so I would say, yeah, peppermint is currently the one I'm getting to know and loving so much. And I encourage everyone, get to know your common herbs.
Yeah. And to speak about teachers, for myself, it's kind of been this like multi-step journey of kind of deepening my own teachings. And so not an explicit teacher, but books that I've read that have been one of my greatest teachings is actually from Matthew Wood. He taught a lot about vitalism, and which is essentially like the acknowledgement that there's this like innate, invisible life force in all of us that strives towards being in health, and that we can work the vital force. I'll kind of stop there because I can go on for hours about the vital force. But he introduced that back into Western herbalism that was kind of lost for a while in favor of more of a kind of a pharmacological approach or a kind of reductionistic approach, which is still important. We need to understand phytochemistry and biochemistry. But he really brings back the traditions of herbalism that have lasted for thousands of years. So that really helped me to kind of integrate a more holistic understanding of herbalism. And then I would say some of my other teachers, like, let's say, Seja Popham. He's been incredible. He's one of the teachers at the School of Evolutionary Herbalism from the United States. He taught a few times in Victoria when I was at school there, and he introduced me to the concepts of vitalism as well, and of alchemy, of kind of the transformative and evolutionary quality of herbs. This is the deeper teachings of plants and how to help us evolve and grow as humans on the planet, and that they offer quite a lot to us on how to be in the world. And then I would also say another teacher that's been quite profound for me, her name is Chanchal Cabrera. She's been an herbalist for over 30 years, pretty much as long as I've been alive. And she's been practicing herbal oncology, for lack of a better term, for that period of time. And so I've studied with her, you know, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. I did her cancer programs then. And then I just recently did a multi-month kind of herbal oncology intensive. It's called Holistic Cancer Care. And she's just been incredible because she's had the decades of experience of seeing how these herbs work in people in conjunction with their chemotherapies, with their immunotherapies, with the radiation and so on. So she can speak to these things from experience, not just from scientific studies and theories. And so that's been incredible. And I give huge credits to the work that she's done and bringing a lot of credibility to herbalism in Canada, which is just so awesome. And so in regards to plants, I'll throw a curveball for you guys. One of my greatest teachings recently is I recently become a bow hunter. And so being in nature, actually learning animals has been one of the greatest teachings for me and their relationships with plants. I'm observing what plants they consume at what time of the year and how they're consuming those plants. And I just find that relationship really incredible, how the plants offer something to the animals that seem to just get devoured, but then they come back even stronger the next year, even though they seem to be completely demolished by these plant by these animals. And it's just really cool watching the relationship between those animals and those plants and just learning these plants in a whole different way that I didn't really acknowledge before, you know, just watching the rose hips getting eaten by bears or deer or whatever, you know, that's teaching me a lot about the rose plant and how they exist in the world and their relationship to other beings in nature as well. So I love that whole aspect of plant teachings as well.
It's so cool. This is really making me think about how rooted, of course, stewardship is in the local, right? Our natural surroundings, and really thinking about where do things come from that we're consuming, or what's the imprint or effect that your business is having on local people who get to learn from you and connect with you. Like, and the ripples are really, really big. And I guess I'm thinking about, oh my goodness, I have an animal doing something. My environment is really funny today, you guys, rolling with it. But yeah, I suppose I'm thinking about just that, like that aspect of local, like the importance or underscoring the importance of local in relationship. And even as a business owner or as a small business, it feels like one of the ways we can kind of combat those larger systemic forces is to like move forward on vision and mission in a way where just having a small business changes the local economy and the economy at large. So I have another question, but it's just escaped me because of the beast that has entered my
house. Okay. Well, I want to say something then, because I remember when I moved from Kelowna, which is not by no means a large city, but a much larger city, to the Kootenays. I moved to Nakusp, which is like, you know, 1,200 people. I was like so excited about my ability to take my money I'm earning from serving Americans and to bring it back into the small town local community that, you know, was a lumber community mostly, and that had like slowed down. And so it was like cool to me that my dollar would actually be serving people so much more, you know, in Nakusp than it might in Kelowna, just because I was taking that money, that currency from elsewhere, and then bringing it like as a resource into the smaller town. And it's sort of the same here. I'm in another small town, just deeper in the Kootenays. It's just that things are never open. So I would spend more money in this town as well. But yeah, I think there is like this, because, you know, a lot of our listeners are coaches and healers and like anti-authoritarian sort of like thought leaders. And most of them are working online. And I don't want to demonize working online, because I do think it allows us this freedom to go a little bit back to nature if that's what we want, or be, you know, be anywhere and continue to serve. And there might be something really special if you're listening. Like, a lot of people come to us and they're like, okay, I work in this place and I want more freedom, or I want to have an online business and I'm pivoting from, I don't know, a lot of people are psychiatrists who are pivoting to wanting to be more like holistic coaches. And like we always say, or like doulas, we got a lot of doulas coming through right now. And like, it's so much easier and better to start in person in your town and serve people that you can see and meet and feel the resonance with. And then take that if you're going to online, because yes, also your message should be allowed to be like woven right through the global culture as well. And then also, like, as a self-proclaimed anarchist, I'm very much a person who believes that all decisions should be made in small groups for the people who are there, right? So like when we have this like grand power of like a federal government, like how do the people who are there know what's best for the land here, right? Or you know, we have fires here, right? It was a really fiery year for the Kootenays. And like, I'm just so frightened because first of all, the fires could be such a beautiful regenerative thing for the forest. But unfortunately, when our forests get burnt, then the logging companies are invited into land they weren't invited into before, right? So I don't know what this has to do with, I mean, I know what parts of it have to do with like herbalism. And it's like, how can we get involved in this like local way, especially when it can be kind of, I don't know, it can make people despair, myself included, I think, because I think those fires are so scary. We're worried about, you know, our own homes and stuff. And it's such an important part of the ecological process if we allow it to then like evolve on its own the way it's meant to, the way fire is meant to be a part of the process. And instead, we come in with people whose best interests aren't, you know, the being in right relationship with the land, and they just come and start, yeah, you know, clear cutting and then monocropping like plants back in. So anyway, I don't know where I went with that, but that's fine. I hope the leafless question came back.
It did, and it well, and you're. That tied back into the question because I was thinking about, you know, we keep underscoring this idea of relationship, and it appears that an aspect of the healing that happens through plants or getting to know, Maria, as you said, your simple plant neighbors that are here for you. There's such an emotional healing aspect to becoming connected or acquainted again, These may be simpler than we think ways to feel reconnected through and via relationship. And I'm really struck by the idea that herbal medicine, like as opposed to that sort of extractive, like, oh, I have a headache, I will take this for this and X will happen. Instead, that like looking at the kind of complexity of the human and like lived experience and finding like synergistic, not just solutions, but conversations, let's say, that create more depth and equanimity all around. So yeah, I'm grateful to both of you for kind of highlighting the beautiful, simple complexity and simplicity. And I want to know what's really alive for both of you as we call this softpreneur. So as softpreneurs these days, what does it look like to be, you know, a business owner who's also an herbalist and a steward of the earth?
Oh my goodness. This time of year is always wild for us because we are avid gardeners for our food. And Travis spends a lot of time hunting, and then we're harvesting all of our herbs, and we're kind of just winding down right now from a big season of gathering all of our goods essentially for the winter. And so I love the term softener, and I feel like we're going into a softer era, hopefully. Because the fall is always quite full on for us. And I think we're both looking forward to some nesting time and just like really zeroing in on our sharing with our clients. We're going to do belonging again, so we'll be launching that again. And we have a few projects that we're kind of looking forward to, but there's always more of a softer quality in the wintertime, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. And as we grow as a business, this is something we kind of revisit almost on a yearly basis, is like, what is our vision? What do we want to keep? What do we want to get rid of? What's really working well? What isn't? And so we're actually going to be entering into that time where we're doing our big reflections for the year, because this is a big transitional phase where we start to envision again. And so there has been a big transition in our business in the sense that we're kind of moving away from a publicly available product line, and we're much more focusing on the educational piece and working on that one-on-one type of work. It's much more fulfilling for both of us. We really enjoy that type of work. We do see a lot more results from that type of work as well. And we do feel like there's also a need for a lot more education about what holistic health looks like, what herbalism looks like, how you integrate that into our lives. And of course, the larger picture of our worldview is integrated into all the work that we do. But we just see that there's such a need for healthcare right now. And it's quite limited in Canada in a lot of ways for a number of different reasons. And so being there for people in times of need is really important. And so we are kind of refocusing our business right now into that type of work. And it's really interesting because it's caused us a lot of reflection. We have had different businesses reach out from other places in Canada wanting to carry our products. And we actually have conscientiously said no. And that, you know, that's probably a bad business decision, but it actually isn't in alignment with what we do, because we actually couldn't be stewards of the land in a good way, because that means we would actually have to increase productivity, and the landscape in which we work in wouldn't actually be able to handle that type of level of industrial production if we continue to grow our business. So we have conscientiously kept the product line within our local businesses and within our own kind of sphere, because we see that there's limitations to growth, and that unlimited growth is actually very detrimental, whether it's in the herbal world or in the broader kind of industrial capitalistic world we live in. So we've made those conscientious choices to do that. And if someone wants to go purchase another product or work with a particular herb that we don't have enough of or we don't carry, we're happy to support other herbalists in other demographic or other areas in Canada as well. And we'll just refer people. And for us, that's like maintaining integrity, but also maintaining our own ability to work in our business long-term as well, because we can't run a huge product line as well as do our gardens, our foraging, and our clinical work, and our education. So we've kind of hit our limitations of growth in that respect. And we made that conscientious decision to kind of reduce that so we can refocus to this other thing that is both fulfilling to our hearts, and we see more results in that type of work.
Yay. Okay. That is beautiful in about a million different ways. Elisa, you had something to say and I jumped in, so go ahead.
Oh, I just love that so much, because it's such a, like, that's another like great example of what business energetics or doing business in alignment with like your truth looks like, and recentering based on what gives you the most joy and energy and feels like it has the biggest impact. To me, I just love hearing business owners say that that's the way that they're making choices or stewarding their business and the earth. Like, what a support. It's so supportive from so many directions. So I just wanted to celebrate that choice. And I'm excited to see what grows from that.
Yeah. And for people who are listening who are like, oh, darn, I don't live in Nelson, that means I can't work with Marie and Travis. I know that the program that I'm in is online, and Belonging is online as well. So I'm assuming when you're talking about education, you're not just speaking about like educational things that are happening like within the town you're in, right? But there's also, yeah, like these online offerings, and like the depth of what these guys teach, it's definitely worth it to do it online. I missed a number of classes last year because I was traveling and stuff, and the information was like still there for me. Are you able to work like over Zoom with people and then send them herbs?
Yeah, we do distance consultations. So I've done distance consultations within Canada. We're not able to send herbs across the border, but within Canada, I've seen clients, in Saskatchewan, Ontario, Alberta, and so on. And so we can help people there. And we would just ship our herbs that direction. But in some cases, we've just referred to other herbal dispensaries or apothecaries that can then formulate those herbs for those particular people as well. And, you know, within cancer care, you know, we are in a small town, so there is only a limited amount of people that are going through cancer care. So myself and other people who work in cancer care often do designate people online to provide that knowledge. of support.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So I just wanted to underline, highlight, and emphasize, which is my new favorite phrase, that you can still study with Althea online. It is more than worthwhile. And yeah, I suppose it's probably getting close to time to close. Is there anything... And we're going to give people where they can find you. But other than that, is there anything that you would really like our listeners to know before we end this podcast? Anything you'd love to impart?
I'll start. First of all, one of our main teachings in the program that you're a part of, Dawn, is that you have all of the instrumentation, for lack of a better term, to connect with plants and learn from plants directly. We have the ability to sensitize ourselves and experience the magic of the living world around us. It's only these barriers that have been constructed over our lives and prior to our lives being here that are limiting our ability to connect in a deeper way. But it's there just behind this thin veil, and we all have that opportunity to be with plants, to be with nature, and feel the magic of
that. I think that was perfect.
Yeah, I agree. I love it. That's really been like the journey of my life over the last couple of years. And it was such a lucky serendipity that I met you two and learned about the program. Because I was like, oh, this is exactly what I need to write my novel. So we'll get there. The novel will come out, you know. But that's sort of like what it is, that we are all connected intimately. And we have that ability. We've just sort of blocked it, right? It's been blocked in many ways from many patterns. Yeah, I want to encourage people to, yeah, get around people who are feeling those connections. This is, Elisa and I were speaking about this for like an hour this morning before we started work, was like about how people like Elisa, who works with like flower essences and the fairies and the elementals, as well as, I'm not outing her, she's already been outed multiple times. Yeah, being around her, or I studied with a woman who was like channeling starseed song codes over the weekend, or being with you people who are like actively both in this like, you know, scientific, clinical, and in this like holistic feeling way. The more you can be around people who are doing that, the more you can have the world open up to you in ways that you didn't know that was possible because you hadn't seen it yet. So I'm so glad that is the message you want to impart. Yeah, it's been life-changing for me for sure. And yeah, where can people find you if they want to, you know, belong next spring, you know, or join next year when the Plant Teachings Collective opens, or any other things? Where are the best people? But where are the best people? They're everywhere. Where are the best places for people to find you?
Definitely Instagram is great. Our name is a little bit tricky. People always miss one of the A's. So if you're looking for us, it's Althaea. So Althaea, A-E-A at the end, and then herbals with an H.
And if you're not on Instagram, following us through our website at AltheaHerbals.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there. You know, once every couple weeks or so, there'll be a newsletter and you'll get a lot of the insights into what we do, what we're offering. That's the best way to kind of follow our classes.
Love it. And I love their emails, guys. So you can go and swipe them too. Yay. Well, thank you so much for being here. Elisa, is there anything you want to impart, or is your child singing again?
No, he was sung to sleep. We all, this conversation, like now he's in beautiful dream time. So I'll let everybody know that we can tune into toddler sleep. And, but yeah, I just wanted to say thank you so much. And thank you for that message too, that because, you know, I think a lot of us, and like softpreneur is the dream. And sometimes we spend a lot of time like in front of our computers or not connecting. And I feel like there can be this feeling of pressure sometimes when you've been a little disconnected from nature, like how will she know me? Or do I, you know, like, it's like awkward, like a relationship that's maybe had a little bit of, ice or something. And so that invitation or permission field, that we always have that available to us. So I wanted to say thank you for kind of setting that permission. And if there's anything else that sparks in you, I'd love to hear before we let you go. But
yeah, I think that's the big piece for sure. It's just that like, it's so simple. And I always remind people that there's plants and nature all around us, whether it's just stepping out the door, whether it's looking out the window, whether it's literally tuning into our own animal bodies, which are inherently nature, right? Like it's never far away. It's just a matter of redirecting our conscious awareness. And so, yeah, like you said, sometimes it might feel a little bit icy, but that ice can be melted pretty quickly if we choose for it to be.
And the ice is nature too. Thank you both so, so much. Well, hopefully we'll do this again someday.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, which is awesome.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Softpreneur Podcast. If it resonated with your ethos and your soul, we would be so grateful to you if you leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast.
This helps us grow so much, and it also helps more visionary business owners find the show so they can make their dream life, their real life. So many blessings and love.